So what we're going to be covering today is Ephesians 5, 1 through 15. It's not easy being you. You have expectations of yourself that you often fail to meet. And sometimes you beat yourself up for it. If people knew how hard you were on yourself, they'd go a little bit easier on you. Deep down you believe there's something special about you, and once in a while, others notice it and affirm it to you, and you feel great about yourself for a moment, but then that moment fades and you're left waiting for another moment. No, it's not easy being you. So from selfies to shout-outs, we use social media a lot to build up and also at the same time break down self-image. Sometimes it's towards us, sometimes it's towards others. So there's no law that says that you have to post a selfie before, during, after any activity, but for teens today, it's almost mandatory, it seems. So resulting likes, thumbs up, other ratings that get tallied. For some, especially girls, what starts to be a fun way to document and share experiences can turn into an obsession about approval that can wreak havoc on self-image. A recent survey was done on a website called Common Sense Media, and out of the people they surveyed, 35% were worried about people tagging them in unattractive photos. 27% felt stressed out about how they looked in those photos. 22% felt bad about themselves if their photos were ignored. How many of you have ever felt this way? Have you ever been on the bad end of a photo? Have you ever contributed to a negative remark on a photo? So we're called to be imitators of God as beloved children, to love others as Christ has loved the world, but sometimes that can be hard if we have trouble loving ourselves. How can we begin to love others if we don't quite believe that we are loved by friends, by family, by peers, or a simple question, if in fact we are even worthy of love? Or perhaps you could use some encouragement and tools on how to be more loving to others. So, Ephesians. So why was this passage written? So Paul is writing a letter to encourage the Gentile believers and to make it clear that Jews and Gentiles have been brought together as one part of the body of Christ. Paul is also concerned that his audience be made aware of the moral laws that may have been lax in the following, or maybe they were just unaware of. Paul clearly wants his Gentile brothers and sisters to know that in God's kingdom, they're first-class citizens alongside their Jewish brethren. So let's read the first few verses of the passage. Does someone have a Bible handy? Can read? Anybody? Thanks, Harry. The passage is Ephesians 5, and we're just going to read the first couple verses.
Verses what?
Ephesians 5, just verse 1 and 2.
Therefore, be imitators of God, beloved children, and walk in the love of Christ, loved us, and gave himself up for us, a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God.
So he's likening Jesus' sacrifice for us being pleasing to God as if we walk in the love that it will be pleasant as well. So being Christ-like in all of your relationships, including our Christian brothers and sisters. So what are some examples of that? Like, what are ways that we can love one another? Being kind, caring, thinking of others, putting their needs before our own, loving others like brothers and sisters. Now, like, I really struggle with that statement. So out of those among you that have siblings, I found this to be really, really hard. I didn't really like my sisters growing up. They were like major pains, and I had no desire to get to know them better. Number one, I was a few years older than them, and they just were always bugging me a lot to like play with them, and I had more important things to do, like sleep, watch TV. And at times, I would take advantage of my sisters. I had three younger sisters, and they kind of staggered in age. And I don't know if you, when you were a kid, if you ever would go into Safeway with your parents and they had the little quarter machines and you could get like a little toy or a little, you know, some little figure. So I would collect those, and then I would have a room sale. So this was an opportunity for my sisters to like see my room, and it was like a very cool place for them because they were never allowed. So I'd open up the doors on this one occasion, and then I would have these like toys set out, and then I would sell them for higher than what I paid for them. So instead of like a little sticky hand for a quarter, it would be like 50 cents. So I did this a few times, and they loved it, but it was really taking advantage of them because they were trusting little kids. So I kind of feel bad about that, but at the time, of course, I didn't. It wasn't really until I was much older that I began to see my sisters and people in general for their individual uniqueness. I started to appreciate diversity and variety. It's what makes us pretty special. Like, not everyone needs to be like me. I think one of the things I also struggled with was, does it matter what others think of me? Like, no, it doesn't. I'm my own person. I don't care what people think. People don't like me. Oh, well, tough. But then, as I got older, I started to ask myself the question, am I responsible for the way that people perceive me? So let's think a little bit abstractly for a moment. So just kind of contemplate this statement. You exist in others' minds when you are not physically present. That is, you affect people whether you know it or not, and whether you want to or not. So you affect others whether you know it or not, just by being you. That you, the you that exists in others' minds, including friends, loved ones, may be drastically different than your own conception of you. So the differences between the two models of you can be enlightening. There's you, the way you think you are perceived, and the way that you are actually perceived. That said, you don't actually exist in others' minds unless you make yourself known to them. So don't expect others to know you or want to know you based on your reputation, your appearance, your subtle actions that you try to make them notice you. So with the mindset that we are loved and called to love others, should we care not only about others for specific moments, but how we are perceived ongoing? So as you're living out your life, should we be conscious, and we should be conscious, of how we treat others? So what kind of person do you want to be perceived as? And what are things that get in the way of living this way out? So I had said earlier, we are called to be Christ-like, we are called to love others. What are things that get in the way of that? So we'll read the next passage part to get a sense of that. Can someone read verses 3 and 4 and 5 and 6? Go ahead.
Chapter 1.
So this is Ephesians 5. Yeah. 3 through 6.
5, 3 through 6. Okay. But sexual immorality and all impurity or covetousness must not be named among you, as is proper among saints. Let there be no filthiness, nor foolish talk, nor crude joking, which are out of place, but instead let there be thanksgiving. For you may be sure of this, but everyone who is sexually immoral or impure, or who is covetous, that is, an idolater, has no inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these things the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience.
Thank you, Holly. So this is pretty heavy, but pretty clear. Whoever is sexually immoral has no inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. So know this, we're made for intimacy. Sexual intimacy is a gift. Be thankful for it. The feelings that you have, they're a gift from God, and they're pretty amazing. In a marriage, and they're honorable to God, but any sexual immorality outside of marriage is wrong. So Paul also says we shouldn't even talk about fascinations for some. Talking about these things at times can actually grow our appetite for more. And ultimately, what you think influences what you do and who you are. So again, it sounds harsh, and the result of sexual immorality is self-destructive. But Paul's not just frowning upon all the bad things and all these deeds that people are doing, but he's not opposed to people's enjoying these things in marriage, but really what he's saying is that you're made for so much more, that we are beloved children of God. So we're human, we're vulnerable to doing wrong things, doing actions that are self-destructive, when typically we're missing something in our lives, when we're lonely, when we think the future is bleak, when we go through emotional pain. We can make it go away for a moment if we are certain of the love of God and of a calling that is greater, a finer intimacy, then this other stuff recedes. Because pursuing a relationship with Him is so much more important. We are not who we once were. We are forgiven. We live in the light. Can someone read verses 7 through 12?
Therefore, do not be partners with them. For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Live as children of the light, for the fruit of the light consists in all goodness and righteousness and truth.
And read through 12.
Okay. Have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them. It is shameful to even mention what the disobedient do in secret. But everything exposed by the light becomes visible, and everything that is illuminated becomes a light.
So realize that we are children of the light. Let's be thankful for that. We are forgiven. We're not who we used to be. If you spend too much time dwelling and discussing the bad things, they could become alluring again. And let's be thankful for these truths. Be thankful for the good news that we have been given. So I'll go ahead and read verses 13 and 14. But when anything exposed by the light, it becomes visible. For anything that becomes visible is light. Therefore it says, awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. So what you might have done in the past is dead. Our beliefs awaken us to the truth. Verse 15, look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but wise. So let's keep an eye out for those things that trip us up. And when we're confronted with them, and confronted with people that try to bring us down or things that try to tear us down, it not only affects us, but it affects others. Because if we feel bad, then sometimes we try to share that unhappiness and act it out against other people. So the other passage that is included here is Philippians 2, 3 through 5, and I'll go ahead and read that. And then we're going to do an activity. So do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility. Count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Have this in mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus. So let's treat our brothers and sisters well. Let's think beyond ourselves. Let's celebrate the uniqueness of each other. We're all pretty amazing, pretty silly, pretty funny, and all this is possible through Jesus Christ. Have any of you guys heard of the Ugly Selfie Challenge? So do you know who that Jerome Jarre is? He's got like all those funny Vine videos of doing like silly things. Well, he's starting a new selfie campaign, and it's called #UglySelfieChallenge, and it's basically kind of snuffing out this concept that we all have to post ourselves in these super amazing light with lots of filters and effects, and that's the only way that people will appreciate us for who we really are. So it's counterculture. It's saying, why don't you go through your existing photos and put up something that, I don't know, you perceive as ugly, and let's just be silly about it, because really, the way we are, we're ugly at times, we're cute at times, we're silly at times, we're, you know, have amazing moments, sad moments. That's the whole package. When I think about my relationship with Jen, I think about that despite all my ugliness, like, she still loves me. Like, and that's pretty awesome. So I can somewhat grasp the concept that we have a God that's so amazing that he loves us despite our ugliness. Okay, so what I need to do, how many people did you say we have today?
We have about 27, 28.
Yeah, so let's do four groups of seven-ish. And we'll have two groups on this side and then two groups stay here on this side. So why don't we count off one through four and we'll go this way. Okay, so for the activity, this is an encouragement game. So listen up. So you're going to sit in your group, and each of you is going to get a piece of paper and a writing utensil of the pen variety. And what you're going to do is write your name on it at the top. So you're going to write your name at the top of the piece of paper, and then you're going to hand it to the person to your right. And each person is going to write one positive characteristic about the person whose name is at the top of the paper. So you can't write anything bad, you can't write anything negative. It's one positive characteristic about the person who's at the name is at the top of the paper. So after everyone passes it around the paper to their left again and you come around to your name, then we're going to share with each other what people wrote.